I'm Dave King.
And I'm Alicia Reid. Welcome to Rotary Unscripted, the monthly podcast for Rotary Magazine for Great Britain and Ireland.
Yep, we're back once again at the studios of Swindon 105.5, where the microphones are live, the coffee is dangerously close to the mixing desk, and the studio clock already appears mildly unimpressed with us all.
Don't think it's just the studio clock, don't. Anyway, this month we're looking firmly towards Rotary's future with three huge areas of focus. How the organisation grows, how it connects with younger generations, and how it funds its work for the long term.
And the reason we're doing that is because Rotary internationally is having some important conversations right now. For example, how do you attract people in a world where volunteering looks very different from 20 or 30 years ago? How do you modernise without losing your identity? And how do you ensure Rotary's humanitarian work remains sustainable for future generations?
And joining us today are three guests who are all deeply involved in those conversations, but from very different perspectives.
Our first guest is Tom Gump from the United States. He's the Rotary International Director-elect and one of Rotary's leading global voices on membership growth and innovation.
And then we'll hear from Chloe Rollings, the new chair of Rotaract Great Britain and Ireland, who's helping shape how Rotary engages with younger professionals and emerging leaders.
And finally, we'll speak to Cheryl Law from Wendover in Buckinghamshire, whose work around major gifts and endowment fundraising focuses on Rotary's long-term financial future.
So membership, leadership, philanthropy, and the future direction of Rotary itself. There's plenty to get into.
Okay, let's crack on then. Our first guest is one of the most recognisable voices in Rotary when it comes to membership growth and club innovation. In fact, I think we last met in Manchester a couple of years ago. Tom Gump is a member of the Edina Morningside Rotary Club in Minnesota and currently serves as chair of Rotary International's Membership Growth Committee. He's also been selected to serve as a Rotary International Director from 2026 to 2028. Now, Tom has built a reputation for helping to create unconventional and cause-driven Rotary clubs aimed at attracting people who may never have previously considered Rotary as a membership cause. Alongside that, Tom has sponsored more than 50 new members into Rotary and has spoken extensively around the world about how Rotary needs to evolve in a changing society. Tom, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
It is a pleasure to be here, and I'm so excited about the program today.
Oh, no, and thank you very much for joining us. So, I mentioned there, chair of Rotary International's Membership Growth Committee. What's that all about?
Rotary International is composed of a number of committees, and these committees get together and basically present strategic options for the board of directors to consider so that they can both motivate and set the right direction to grow Rotary.
And in a sense, looking ahead to where we are now, what position do you think Rotary's health is like in terms of membership? How does the committee view Rotary membership around the world globally?
Well, Dave, it's a very exciting time in Rotary. Rotary International is doing something historic for itself. It has set a five-year goal, and that's called our 2030 goal because we're trying to reach it by 2030, which will be the 125th anniversary of Rotary International. So by that time, we would like to grow Rotary by 1.25 to have a total of 1.25 million members by 2025. So it has allocated funds and has set up regional membership summits, five of them around the world, and they're going to talk about how to get there. And I'm excited to say this is the first time in 5 years, but going into the month of June, we are plus 500 members. And we haven't seen membership growth in 5 years at the end of the year. So it's a great time to be in Rotary working on membership.
Yeah, and clearly in Great Britain and Ireland, we have our concerns. I was talking to Yinka Babiola, the incoming Rotary International president, and he tells a story about how once when he became an RI director, he asked about membership numbers at a meeting. And was told that Africa was irrelevant in that general growth patterns, because numbers were down. Now Africa has risen quite considerably with the rest of the world. And when he came to the UK earlier this year, he said the danger that Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland faces, if it doesn't get its act together, is it faces becoming irrelevant. So what are your thoughts on that and the work that Rotary is doing in these Isles around the North Star Initiative?
Thank you, Dave, very much for that question. And you know, your questions always challenge me. I love your magazine because, unlike other regional magazines, it doesn't just focus on Rotary. It actually focuses towards the outside audience, which I think is going to help your membership growth. Yes, there's challenges. There's challenges in Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland, as there are in North America. But I do believe that the trend is going to change and we're going to get positive. You know, there's so many different variables that affect membership. Areas of the world that have rising middle class and rising income, they have rising growth in Rotary. And the opposite is true for those that don't have that rising growth. I love the pilot program that is referred to as North Star. And the reason I do is because they have some things that I think that we've learned from that we could actually apply elsewhere around the world, especially your corporate membership, where you're going after corporations and having the whole corporation join with its members. I love that idea. I also love the North Star project component of the online club, where you don't have to actually join in person, but you could be on a Microsoft Meets platform, join as a member of Rotary without belonging to a club. I currently sit as the director liaison to the strategic plan committee, and they are looking at all these different variables. And what they tell us is studies show that people may not want to join clubs, but they do want to do service. And I do think that the fundamental of Rotary with the service, and I'm sure that Cheryl will talk about this, and Chloe will talk about what the Rotary actors are doing, we can use what we learned from the pilot in Great Britain and Ireland to apply to other places to grow Rotary.
And it's working, to be fair. Quickly bringing Cheryl on, and good evening, Cheryl. You know, we had a leadership development forum earlier this year, and it was said at that forum that without North Star, our membership numbers would be down quite considerably.
Yeah, it did. And what it showed numbers-wise was that we've hit the level, so we're not dipping, and we're just starting to tail up, which is so. For years, we've always gone down. Mm. Like you were saying, Tom, that the numbers around the world are 500 up at the end of the Rotary year, which is phenomenal. But that's, we're seeing that pattern here as well, and I think that is a really good pointer, hopefully, to where we're going, and we have to just keep on going.
It's a strength. Here's an easy question for you, Tom. When you look at Rotary today, do you think the challenge is mainly about attracting people, or is it about Rotary actually adapting itself to modern life?
Dave, I think it's a combination of both. You know, there's different kind of philosophies about how to grow Rotary, but the reality is, if we want to have sustainable growth, there are a few things we have to do, and we have to do those things at the same time. First, we need to attract members and bring them into our current clubs. They're the backbone of Rotary, our current clubs. The second thing we have to do is we have to engage those members. And I'm excited to hear about what Chloe and Cheryl are going to say about our projects, because that's a wonderful way to engage our members. Some people call it retaining. The third thing we need to do is we need to form new clubs. Because basically, when we look at the numbers, Dave, and take a deep dive, the areas of the world that are losing clubs and not starting new clubs are declining in membership. The areas, and that's mostly in the Northern Hemisphere. And there's some exceptions, of course. In the Southern Hemisphere, they're growing because they're starting more clubs than they're losing. So we have to do all three of those at the same time. Bring those members in, engage our current members, start new clubs. But one thing that wraps all around that is club culture. We have to make sure our clubs are attractive. And especially for people like Chloe, when she maybe decides after doing Rotaract, she may be in Rotaract forever. But if we make our clubs attractive to young people, maybe she will then join a Rotary club and be a member of both. Or thank you for the question.
No, and let me lead on to that. And maybe Chloe, I might even ask you to join in this one, because Rotary has historically, hasn't it, revolved around weekly meetings and business structures. But Tom, asking you first, and maybe Chloe can follow up, do you think younger generations are looking for something fundamentally different now?
They really are, Dave. The old model really doesn't work. I mean, when we talk to people what they're looking for, they're looking to do service. They're looking not to have a lot of downtime. Now, that doesn't mean that Rotary is becoming irrelevant. Rotary is in 200 different countries, speaks all these different languages. We're all around the world. We have 1.2 million, 1.1 plus members right now. But if we change the structure and move away from meetings, but actually have it be a global network where I can reach out to Chloe's club and find out what she's doing in her area and help her. I could reach out to my friends in Uganda. I could reach out to my friends to India. So we have an exciting future. But you're right, Dave. If we don't change the model, if we don't innovate, we won't grow.
Chloe, what are the younger generations looking for in Rotary?
I think for me, the crucial thing is where we start. So for Rotaractors and for Rotarians, I think the journey begins when we have a desire to make a difference within our community, whether that be local, national, international. It's that desire that we want to turn into action. And I think that's what's starting to change, where people don't have as much opportunity within work to hold Rotary meetings or attend them, where people want to take their first steps into leading a project but don't know how to get started. And the challenges that our society is facing is changing as well. So people don't know how to make that meaningful change for themselves and those around them. And I think being part of a network that has a structure, it has teams behind it, it has other clubs and other people that you can go to and ask those questions and say, hey, I want to do this thing, can we do it together? And it's that collaboration that I think people really value from both the Rotary and the Rotaract network. And I think for Rotaractors, it's that flexibility to be able to do it around their work lives, around other volunteering or life commitments, or, you know, even the sort of added extras that they do to
We're
go above and beyond
makers,
in their roles and in their lives.
And looking at your Rotary and Wendover, what's your thoughts
together,
on the way that
no
Rotary shaped them
accomplish.
And what it needs to do
Take
to attract younger generations?
Find out more at rotary.org.
I would say that my club, which is a very tiny club, probably represents a large proportion of clubs in our country. We struggle. We do struggle to attract younger people. We are out in our community, but what we do and what we have to offer is not what they're looking for. And I think that's what we have to do, is realise that the world has changed and what people want, how they want to do things is different. And so either we change, which my club's actually very willing to do, or you start something new. And it's really important that the needs of the new people, younger people, are met. And that doesn't necessarily come in the old way that we do things. Our old ways may work as well, but if it's different, if they need something, you go with that. And that's, I think, give them the power to develop that. And as long as we're all making a difference in the world, I don't think it really matters if it's the old way for the older generation and a different way for new.
So, Tom, what lessons can Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland learn in terms of membership innovation? What tricks can we take from North America?
Some of our clubs work for people. They like the way it's going. I think she's also right that we have to do some change. I've really been motivated by both what Yinka has been saying and Rotary International President Larry's been saying, president nominee. Larry says we need to be intentional. Now, Dave, when I was president of my club, together we grew 31 members. And the way we did it was we took the English alphabet and went A through Z. We put every vocation that was reasonable. A, we went accountant, architect, B, banker, all the way down to L, landscaper, and Z, zookeeper. And we looked at our, I never did get the zookeeper, but I did get a landscaper and a librarian. The point is, we looked at who was in our club. You know, we used to have an architect, but he retired. So we said, okay, who knows someone in their family or friend that's an architect? Sally raises her hand and says, okay, my brother's an architect. We can bring him in. And I'm not saying that would work in every club in Rotary and Great Britain and Ireland, but I am saying if you're intentional and you look at who you're missing and you share your joy of Rotary with those individuals, you can get them to join. And then we reach our objective, which is we have more hands and hearts to do more good in the world, as Cheryl said.
Speaking of being intentional, and please do stay with us here, we move on to our second guest, someone who is very intentional. She represents one of the younger leadership voices emerging within Rotary Great Britain and Ireland. Chloe Rollings recently became the chair of Rotaract GB&I and now acts as the national representative voice of Rotaractors across Great Britain and Ireland. Now, Chloe's originally from Lincolnshire and has already held a number of leadership roles within Rotary and Rotaract, including President of Rotaract Tyneside and President of Grantham Sunrise Rotary Club. Professionally, she works in the charity and policy sector and has become closely associated with youth engagement, widening participation and modern communications inside Rotary. Chloe, a warm welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Thank you so much for having me and for that very great introduction. Well, I just sound really impressive then.
I have to say, we're lucky to have you on board. You seem to have achieved an incredible amount of very impactful things. So I can't wait to get into all of this. So I understand you got into Rotary through the Rotary Youth Leadership Award Scheme, otherwise known as RILA, a few years ago. I'd love to know more about that.
Absolutely. So I took part in RILA in 2021. I was the first cohort post-pandemic, so they were very much figuring out what the programme was going to look like going forward. And for me, it was one of the most life-changing experiences I've had as an adult. And when I talk to people about RILA, I talk about how I learned how to be a leader in a room full of other leaders. I had done programs and initiatives before where I had built my confidence and developed my public speaking. But actually, there was something about understanding how to navigate conversations, relationships, and opportunities with people that also shared those same leadership qualities that I valued, admired, and respected. So for me, I definitely credit a lot of the role that I'm in now to the fact that I went on the RILA program and developed those skills.
It's great that you see that as a life-changing experience, but a question here is, how did you get into that? How did you get to know about this opportunity?
So I was working for a college at the time that was developing a new education programme within the college, but it was a national initiative. And the real focus was about giving people real life hands-on experience. And nobody stepped forward for this role, and they advertised it two or three times. It came out saying, actually, you know, staff can get involved too. Put my hand up and spoke to a couple of the Rotarians from my local club and said, you know, I was part of the NCS programme. I was part of, you know, youth leadership programmes elsewhere. Can I get involved in this? And they said, you're exactly the type of candidate we're looking for. Please interview. And I'm actually still really good friends with the Rotarian that interviewed me all those years ago.
Coming on to Rotary, you've argued that Rotaract should be seen as a form of Rotary membership in its own right. So how does it stand at the moment and what is that distinction?
Really great question and something that we're talking about a lot more. So Rotaract is a type of Rotary membership that is set out in the Constitution. Where the challenge lies is it used to sit under youth services as a programme for young people. And so we're really trying to shift the narrative now that actually it's not just young people, you know, 18-year-olds that are getting involved in Rotary. We're talking about people who are, like myself, a policy officer, a prison officer. I've got people that lead marketing teams and accountants that are managing multi-million pound budgets who are also Rotaractors. So for us, it's really about having that recognition that we are a group of people that want to do the same good and make the same differences. You know, Rotary clubs, it just has a different offer and it works slightly differently for people who maybe want to be involved in a program or a project that suits their needs more than, say, joining a Rotary club.
And I think that word differently is really central here because the world is different for younger people, and thinking particularly about social media and how people these days form groups and communities, it's just not the same as the traditional Rotary club, is it?
No, and I think people approach Rotary and Rotary service differently to how, you know, Rotaractors approach Rotaract. When you think about people who maybe are just sort of entering the workforce or within, say, the first 10 years of their career, actually the journey that they go to through that employment and their career is very different. You know, people are working from home. You're not having the casual longer lunches. You're not having the coffee conversations. So you talked about some earlier about that being intentional. Rotaractors are coming together to be intentionally social and to have a purpose alongside their friendships. And I think that's something that, you know, has been, it's sort of taken as the best part of Rotary, that fellowship. Rotary does that a lot better in some ways because it's been ingrained for so long, you know, those clubs that meet for lunch and meals. But when you don't have that time or don't have that money, being able to come together to litter pick for an hour or two, or to write letters to people living with cancer, or even, you know, holding an event like a quiz night because you just want to come together and do something good, actually that sort of it's strength in itself.
Have you got a particular favourite flexible project that you've been head of or been involved in your time as Rotaract?
Oh, I think the one that stands out for me was actually with Rotaract Tyneside, so the club that I'm a part of. Although I don't live anywhere near Newcastle, it's just a club that my friends are in and I really enjoy the projects that they do. So we collaborate with a charity called the Purple Community Fund, who have been connected to Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland for a little while. And they had just been struck by sort of poor weather, you know, hurricane season, and then they experienced a fire. And within 10 days, we were able to pull our little club of Tyneside together, organised to be part of a local craft stand and sell the items that we already had from stock from other events that we had done in partnership with this organisation, and be able to sell them at the Christmas market. And within 10 days, we were able to raise something like £200 to send over to them, just because we were able to meet on that particular afternoon for a few hours. Very little cost to us, but it was our time that we were able to offer. So I think that's probably one of my favourites, just because we were able to do it so quickly and it came from a real passion to make a difference.
So tell me about Club Connect.
Oh, this is our new project that we're really excited about. So in the past, we had been holding conferences very similar to Rotary conferences and conventions that other Rotaractors had been a part of. And whenever we spoke to people about these conferences, they said the best part was the opportunity to connect people to place and really celebrate being part of a global network in somebody's local community. We brought in a director of transformation last year to really look at what Rotaract looks like across Great Britain and Ireland. And the person in post, Danny Brown, is absolutely brilliant. And he came up with this idea of Clubs Connect, where we take a host club and say to them, if we can support you, if we can do this in partnership, can we hold a weekend event where people can come to your club, come to a meeting, come to an event, maybe like your president's handover. And then on another day, we do a bit of a service project within the local community that you're really passionate about. And it was really about asking that question. If you could get 20 volunteers to do something for a day in your community, what would you want us to do? And it's almost like a bit of a hit squad. So we can make a massive impact in a really short amount of time. And that's visible opportunities as well, adding that sort of local national collaboration.
And that's so supportive, isn't it? And that really speaks to something you said I noticed in the March Rotary Mag edition. You said you wanted to create a network where every member feels seen, supported and empowered to create change. And that sounds really supportive, what you've done with the Club Connect there. But what I'd like to ask you about is the empowered to create change part of things. Where do you think that Rotary could improve with that side?
For me, when speaking to clubs, I often hear that everyone's really keen to get involved and support on the day of an event or an activity. But actually, there's some hesitation about stepping into those leadership roles and knowing what that looks like. And we know that Rotary has a really strong training program for its presidents and president-elects, particularly in Great Britain and Ireland. And having been through that process, because I'm currently president of my Rotary Club alongside my chair role, I know the difference that it made for me, having been on that program, connecting with other presidents and president-elects, and being able to share that journey and share the learning as we go through that process. So I think it would be having access to that kind of training, that kind of network where we can say, I feel like I'm leading by torchlight. Everything feels in the dark until someone tells me where to point the light, and then all of a sudden I can see it again. So I think, yeah, if we could have access to that training and those opportunities, I think we would be able to bring more leaders into the same space to learn from one another.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the training and the support, isn't it? And feeling like you're not doing this alone, which is something you do so well. On the other side of things, do you think there's still barriers with Rotary, Rotaract, that we unintentionally put people off? Is there anything, any vibes going out there that really we need to be looking at?
My biggest ask for Rotarians and Rotary clubs is to treat Rotaract and act as if Rotaract is a membership type. It's not a youth program. It doesn't need to be managed. It doesn't need to be facilitated by Rotary. We would love to work in partnership. Let's work in collaboration. That's what this is all about. But actually that shift in narrative that should have happened 30 something years ago when it became a membership type is still something we're having to shift now. And if we can work together as equal partners, I think that will only sort of increase our impact.
Tom, what a whirlwind Chloe is, eh?
Chloe's 100% correct. If you look at where we are in the world as of May 1st numbers, Asia has 56% of our Rotaractors. Europe, Africa, and the Middle East have 28% of our Rotaractors. North America has 6%. Australia's got 1%. Rotary Great Britain and Ireland has less than 1%. So when I travel through Asia, when I travel through Europe, Africa, Middle East, it's different than how it is in North America. If Asia is just over 30% and they have 56% of the Rotaractors, North America's about the same number of Rotarians. We're about just under 30% and we only have 6%. What's the difference? I tell you, when you go to Europe and Africa and the Middle East and Asia, those Rotaractors are treated as true partners, like Chloe was saying. Sometimes in some areas of the world, we form a Rotaract club and we just say, okay, you're on your own. Hopefully you thrive. Hopefully you survive and you don't die. We don't continue to invite them to meetings. We might put them on a committee, but we put them in their own separate committee. So what we're doing, I'm chair of the host operations committee for the 2028 Rotary International Convention in Minneapolis, and we are embedding a Rotaractor in every committee. So we have a separate Rotaract committee, but we do not want them to feel like they're on their own. We want their ideas. We want to be true partners. So if we do what Chloe's saying, and I submit to you, Asia and Africa, when you go to a Rotaract meeting, you're never going to forget it. The drums will be banging, there'll be energy, and they're invited to participate fully, not just invited at the last minute to park cars or do the public relations. True partnership's the answer, Dave.
And Cheryl, we were just sort of talking a little bit off air. We were talking about Ryla. Now, you've done Ryla as a Rotary representative. How did you find it? Where did you go?
Don't ask me where we went. Somewhere around the M25. And it was my district. And it was phenomenal. It was just amazing. But what it was it took people who were quiet, perhaps a bit shy. And over a number of days, they came out these amazing leaders. Yeah. And it was because they were given the chance and the encouragement and the freedom to become the people they could become. And Ryla was, I think Ryla's a wonderful thing.
And Chloe, where did you do your Ryla? Did you get wet?
It's a big part of the programme. So I did mine at Grafham Water, though, in Huntingdonshire. And I loved it. I loved the power boating, the water, like water activities, the canoeing. I won't say anything else that we do because it is one of the best kept secrets that I think has ever come from Rotary, even though Rotary is its best kept secret in itself, of course. But actually, you know, my cohort passed on to the next one. Don't say anything. Don't tell anyone what you do because that mystery is part of the magic.
That sounds a perfect idea.
We're change makers, problem solvers, and community builders. We are Rotary. And together, there's no limit to what we can accomplish. Take action with us. Find out more at rotary.org/action.
Thank you very much for that. Let's move on to our third and final guest, who we've already heard from this evening. That's Cheryl Law, who's a member of Wendover and District Rotary Club, and who works in a senior Rotary Foundation role, specialising in major gifts and endowment across Great Britain and Ireland. Cheryl's work focuses on encouraging substantial giving, planned giving, and legacy donations, which help support Rotary's humanitarian programmes for future generations. Cheryl, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad we got you here, because the story is that you were due to be here a few months ago, and next thing I get a call from your hospital bed.
Yeah.
What happened?
Unfortunately, I had a sort of a medical emergency that didn't know anything about until it happened, and that's because I've got quite a high pain threshold, and they said, haven't you been in pain? I said, yes, but I'm just too busy. And so I was rushed in I had pancreatitis, and I ended up with quite a big operation. But well, I'm fine. I'm here.
And you're looking glamorous as ever. So thank you very much for coming on. In fact, you and Tom, just to quickly jump in here, you're going to be shortly going to the convention in Taipei.
Absolutely, yes.
And it sounds like it's a big sort of glamorous fashion parade. What's happening out there?
Well, Tom and I in there, we're both there. It's actually where you see how big Rotary is, and you understand the size and of Rotary, but the effect it has on our world. It's just the most, a convention is just the most amazing place. And you have everyday Rotarians coming together and just finding out about what's happening around the world and what they can do further, but having fun. And Rotary and Rotaract, it has to be underlined by excitement and fun. And I think that's what the convention does. It really shows you that bigger picture.
So let's talk dressing up then.
Oh, well, I'm always dressed up. I always have my headbands on. These are a bit boring. So...
And Tom, do you have your headbands on?
I can lend
no,
you
No, I don't. But I do have to agree there is some dressing up, especially when it comes to the foundation. And, you know, part of the, and I think the best part of any convention is meeting up with your friends. And I got to say, Cheryl always has a new fancy, sparkly dress on. And when I walk into a donor, I don't have to look for my friend Cheryl. I see her because she will be standing there in a new sparkly dress, headset, and I always... you know, make a beeline over to talk to her.
So have you got an outfit ready for Taipei?
So I wish you would not have asked that question, Dave. But I do have a tuxedo. I got a tuxedo made that has a large mark of excellence. So for the listeners who don't know what that is, because they're not in Rotary maybe, it's a big wheel, which is the main logo of Rotary. And it's on my back. And yes, Cheryl and I do become targets at these things because we do dress a little bit different.
Alicia, do you think there's a marketable game in there with Tom and his board?
Yeah, we were just thinking, you know, make it into a dartboard maybe with the sticky little Velcro type things, and you could, it could be a money making
charge people.
Yes, exactly. You know, that would be the best fun. Cheryl, you'd throw a few darts,
wouldn't
you?
Oh, I'd definitely throw a few things in there. No, not at you though, Tom. But no, and I tend to look upon myself when I'm a colourful person. So when I always go into a room of black and a room of dark grey and a room of navy blue possibly, and then I need to talk to people, and people need to know who I am. I walk in, everyone knows who I am. So I'll just find the lady with the headdress on or whatever. But it brings joy. It brings laughter.
I can see you light up the room even without the sparkle, Cheryl.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
Let's talk about the Rotary Foundation, the work that you've taken on in the last year, really. So when people hear about terms like major gifts, endowment fundraising, it sounds a little corporate, it sounds a bit distant, but in human terms, what does your role actually involve?
I think it's bringing information to people and just encouraging what can be done and the difference that can be made, whether that's a small regular amount or a larger amount, and the lives that can be changed. And I don't tend to talk around figures, I tend to talk around outcomes. Mm-hmm. Because it's the outcomes that moves our hearts. It's the outcomes that make us think, wow, my £10 did that. That is amazing. I'll get, you know, I would like to do that again. When you get into talking about big figures, people just go to sleep and turn off. That's not what excites people. What excites people is the difference they make. So what I do is I do a lot of talking. I know it doesn't sound like it, but I do like talking. And I find out just through general chatting what their interests are, where their interests lie, and can we bring those two things together? And that might be through something like an endowment, which we can talk about in a bit if you like, or it may be just in a small amount that they've given, but they want it to make a difference.
Sure. Let's break it down then. So when we talk about giving, how can Rotarians give to the foundation in the various ways? So perhaps list a few of the avenues that they can go down.
Well, first of all, I'd say always give through Rotary Foundation UK. Because then we can take advantage of gift aid and things like that. But you could give monthly, £10 a month, whatever you feel, which would make you, well, actually it's about £8 a month, you would become a sustained member over a year. Mm-hmm. We can claim gift aid on that as well. Some people want to do a bit more than that. Some people all want to do just a lump sum. So if you were to give $1,000, and that sounds a lot, $1,000 a year, £1,000 a year, whichever. But actually, people can do that through their business. They can. It doesn't necessarily come out of their private pocket. It can come out of their company pocket if it's their own company. So there are lots of different ways. But what we find and what brings real joy is that one day, we'll get notified that someone has become a major donor. That means that they've given $10,000. That might be over 30 years. Mm. And they haven't got a clue. And we get notified and we contact them and we say, this is what you have done. The lives you've changed. And that's a great thing about Rotary. A, the assurance of where the money is used. The stewardship of our funds is very, very good. And the fact that you can do something in a small way, but it has an enormous impact. Mm. And then there are those who can do more and give more. And quite often that is because they've seen their small amounts making that big difference.
Yeah.
And it excites them. It just brings them pleasure and joy to see that they can make a difference to a mother and child, or clean water, or a project at home. Projects don't always have to be abroad. They can be here as well. So little things can have big results, and that just warms your heart, really, and it moves people.
You talk in the third person, but actually it's personal to you.
It is personal to me, yeah. So one day I gave £10 to Empolio Now. And I thought I was the bee's knees. I really did. And I kept adding a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And when I became district governor-elect, I was looking at my giving. I was thinking, if I'm going to go out and talk to Rotarians about giving to the foundation, I need to be giving to it properly. And I was able to do that, and I became a major donor. But things changed to a different level for me. I hope you don't mind me mentioning, but when my son died about 2.5 years ago, unexpectedly, and I wanted to do something that remembered him. He was called our grumbling Rotarian. He wasn't a Rotarian, but he grumbled, but he helped at everything. And I wanted something for his daughter to remember. And I decided to do something called a named endowment. And that is where there is an endowment named after him, which pays out every year to mother and child health services around the world. And in fact, next week, I'm doing another named endowment in his daughter's name. And she got great joy out of her dad having one named. Mm. And then I said to her, how about if I did one for you? And I've allowed her to choose where the profits from the endowment go. And we went through all the different areas of focus, everything you could do. I said, oh, there is an alternative. You can leave it up to Rotarians to decide each year. That's the one, she said, because she's seen. She said, Nanny, I've seen the difference your Rotarians make. You've showed me the projects. They know what they're doing. They can decide. And I just thought, if she's 18 now, 18-year-old can see that, the whole world can see it. I'd love her to join Rotaract. There is no Rotaract near us.
Yeah. And you've been recognised for your work. I know that there was a special presentation by the president, Francesco Rezzo, earlier this year.
Yes, it was in Brussels last year. So I become a member of the Arch Club Society, and that is a recognition for money that you have donated to the charity, to RFUK. I won't say how much it is unless you really want to know, but it's a substantial amount. But I'm able to do that through my businesses.
Sure.
I have two businesses. And can I say, Chloe, that I joined Rotaract in 1979, and that is why I am where I am now. And that is why I have two successful businesses. And that is why I can give to the Rotary Foundation. And it was one of my sponsoring Rotary clubs in London treated us as adults, gave us the ability to learn to lead, and it changed mine and many people's lives. You know Robert Morris, exactly. He was part of my crew. Ros Morris, part of my crew. They all follow me. No, they don't. And that's what Rotaract did. And it was phenomenal. And I can say, hand on heart, that I would not be doing what I am doing now if it wasn't for my 10 years in Rotaract.
So what motivates you? What personally motivates you about this work and the role that you have within Major Gifts and Endowments?
Changing people's lives. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's my bottom line. As I said, I've gone through loss with my son, which was a very difficult thing. But I can make a difference to other people. I can make a difference in a little way. I can make a difference in a huge way. I'm just going to be persistent and keep on doing that. And I don't need to see the clean water. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see the mother who's given birth in safety. I don't need to see a project on the other side of the world or in my own neighbourhood. I just know that they are happening, they've happened, they've changed lives, and it's because of Rotarians, everyday Rotarians. And that to me is, I can't better that.
This is what you call deep impact, isn't it? And Tom, thinking about what Cheryl said about showing people the impact of what their work and what their contributions do, it really helps maintain the membership and that retention, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I must say, Nanny is the bee's knees, but she's absolutely right about the impact. You know, it's one thing to give money, and it's one thing to say we're putting clean water in Honduras. When you actually go to Honduras and you see the mother who's holding a child, and that child is crying because the child has had diarrhea for the last 2 weeks, and it could have been her second baby, and she's, you know, they have a 25% infant mortality rate. 85% of the children die, only 25% live. You put in the fresh water, and they help with that, and it's sustainable. You come back 5 years later, and those numbers switch, and most of their babies are living. That makes a huge difference. So we need to tell those stories. I agree with Cheryl.
And Chloe, from a Rotaract perspective, I mean, younger generations are incredibly passionate. My word, you are incredibly passionate about causes and social impact. But the reality is that they may not have a significant disposable income. So do you think perhaps Rotary sometimes needs to rethink how it talks about giving and about philanthropy to younger members?
That is a fantastic question, because a big area of focus for me is about ensuring that cost is not a barrier to participation for Rotaractors in any way. But I think what Cheryl was just saying there about, you know, being able to give a little bit when you can, and actually having those opportunities to maybe fundraise, whether that's personally through your work or with a group of people, to say, actually, we were able to give a little bit, and those little bits add up, you know, as we sort of have those across the world. And I think just something to jump back to what both Tom and Cheryl have said there is around people personally benefiting or being impacted positively by Rotary's engagement and involvement in their communities. I've spoken to quite a number of people, Rotarians and Rotaractors, who have said, Rotarians were the ones who brought the mosquito nets to my community. Rotarians were the ones who brought the Christmas presents to my island. You know, Rotaract were the ones that helped me get the interview or helped me get the soup for the interview that I wanted to go for. And that's happening in the UK and beyond. And I think there's something about being able to pay that back to the network that's given them so much. And if it wasn't Rotary, being able to pay forward into Rotary the things that they've gained from other programs like myself. So I was part of a number of social mobility programs throughout my education that simply don't exist anymore. But I wouldn't have been where I am now if I hadn't have had the programs that gave me my laptop for the first time and helped me get to opportunities or placements where I got to see, you know, careers in action that I would have never had exposure to before. So there's really something about that giving and philanthropy that's about going, let's pay this forward. And I can go into another story if you like, but one of the people that I met is a brilliant woman named Amanda. And she has personally benefited from Rotary programs and has somehow convinced me to do a wing walk to raise money for foundation in August. So, you know, I can tell you about how that actually came about. But, you know, actually, there's something there about being able to do it with, you know, do these fundraising projects and do these opportunities with other Rotarians who have also benefited from these programs, which is great.
Chloe, you can't come on Rotary Unscripted and not promote your wing walk. Come on, off you go. What is it?
So it's part of Welwyn Garden City Rotary Club's 100th year celebration. Amanda is actually organising a wing walk for 12 flyers to go to Duxford on the 2nd of August to stand on the top of a plane. And I thought, oh, what a fantastic opportunity. I'd love to do that one day. That's great. And I got talking to chair of Rotary Great Britain and Ireland, Heather Stewart, and she was saying, oh, I'm doing it. And casually over pizza, I said, oh, I'd love to do that one day. She went, oh, by the way, there's a space left. I've dropped you dropped you a message. Click this link. You've joined the WhatsApp chat. So I kind of accidentally signed up for this wing walk, but I'm so glad I did. I'm so excited to do it. And we have a huge goal to raise all for Rotary and Rotary causes.
And Cheryl, when you hear Chloe like that, I'm not talking about wing walking, but when you hear about her passion for philanthropy and how it impacts on Rotaractors, I could see you nodding away there. It's almost like you're seeing a mini me.
Well, almost, yes, except for I've never done wing walking. But the whole thing is, you know, people don't need to get hung up on, oh, well, I've got no money, or I can't do this, I can't do that. It's what you can do that counts. And that will change over time. It'll be swing into more practical things, and other times it'll swing into more perhaps monetary things. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. I know Amanda very well. She's in my district. So yeah, I'm really pleased to hear that you and Heather are there. I'll have to find you where else who's doing it. Not me. I'll sponsor you. But I'm not going up on a plane. There wouldn't be one big enough to take me, so that's all right.
Well, a question for everybody here is looking at the future of Rotary. If somebody around the age of, let's say, 28, something like that, up to the 35s, walked in now, how would you engage them? Cheryl, I think.
It's a question I've asked. I've five children, and I've asked them a very similar question. Sort of turn it back to them as to what do you want, and they want fun, fellowship, and a purpose. And that's what I would try and do, is okay. Say, what do you want? What do you want to do? Tell us. Let us yes. help you achieve what you want to achieve. And let's make sure we have fun and fellowship with it as well.
And that's exactly the road you're down, isn't it, Chloe, where you are actually seeing this in action.
Very much so. And I say for both Rotary and Rotaract, its greatest assets are its people. So for me, it's about connecting the person that's walked through the door to the experiences, to the journey, to the opportunities that exist within our network. And I think it's about going along that journey with people rather than trying to sell what we are, show them what we do. And I think often it's about just getting them in the door in the first place to see that.
And Tom, it's interesting what you mentioned earlier about the difference you see in the northern and the southern hemispheres when it comes to your area of expertise. How would you play this with how to engage somebody walking in the door for the first time?
You know, I've been reflecting upon your previous question. I think I could answer both with a story. We need to engage people. The best way to do that is through having them participate in projects. And Rotary is one of those places where you can have an individual who has an idea, and with the help of Rotary, they can effectuate a change in such a positive way. A few months ago, I went down to Mexico to look at a project, and there is a past district governor there, Kiki Lopez, and she had an area of Mexico that didn't have much vegetation. It was basically rock and dirt, and then went into the ocean, and the ocean was rock and dirt. And she wanted to build a coral reef by sinking a battleship. So she got a grant for $180,000 and did the feasibility of how you can sink a ship the right amount in the right place, the right depth, so it still gets light and that kind of thing. And a year later, they had a coral reef. I went down to see that. So they enlarged the project, and they're doing a whole underwater museum now where they have two more battleships. They have a helicopter, an amphibious vehicle, an airplane, and a gun turret. But what has happened over the years is these people not only got involved with this, and her brother was in the Navy, and he's been reassigned to this town to live there to work on this project. But now there are four hotels in the area that have sprung up because all these people are coming from around the world to go dive in this area. So it's not only giving good PR, but there's businesses forming. When I went to the year celebration, they formed a club with all the people who worked with the hotels in the area. So that grew Rotary membership. So that one spark in one person changed that whole area. And that's how we grow Rotary.
So if we were to book you all to come back on the podcast in 2035, what would you hope has changed in that time, Cheryl, if I can ask you first?
That our focus is outward looking and youthful, and that we change in a timely fashion to the needs of the day is what I would hope, and that there would be a passion of philanthropy and love for our fellow Rotarians, but the world.
I think I'm going to be a Rotarian until 2095, to be honest. I love being part of this network. I think for me, I would love to be able to come back on to Unscripted in 2035 and to be able to say, we did that. We did this thing. Have a look. See the change that we've made. You know, we often talk about charity as, you know, the greatest gift would be that we are not needed anymore. There's never going to be that because we have so many areas of focus and so many opportunities to make a difference. But I think there's something really special about being able to say we've left that legacy. We've left this place in a better place than we found it.
And Tom, what article are you writing about 2035 and before?
Well, we have a vision statement that says, together we see a world where people unite to take action to create lasting change across the world, in our communities, and in ourselves. I would like to see us innovate, like Dave said, and change from just a place where we meet and hear a good speaker and have a meal, but really move towards using our global network to do more good in the world. And if we actually do that, we will have the more hands and more hearts to do the service that will lead us to that vision statement.
Thank you very much. And so, as the studio clock starts gently reminding us that even Rotary conversations need an ending, although some committees' meetings I think will suggest otherwise, we should bring this edition of Rotary Unscripted to a close.
To Tom Gump, Chloe Rollings and Cheryl Law for three thoughtful conversations about Rotary's future, from membership and younger leaders to long-term sustainability and philanthropy.
And our thanks as always to the team here at Swindon 105.5 for keeping everything running smoothly behind the scenes. You can find this and previous episodes of Rotary Unscripted through Rotary Magazine's digital platforms and wherever you get your podcasts.
And if today's episode has shown anything, it's that Rotary's future conversations are already happening around leadership, flexibility, communication, and how service evolves in a changing world.
So our thanks to Tom Gump.
And thank you so much for this opportunity.
To Chloe Rollings.
Thank you for having me.
And to the glamorous Cheryl Law in the studio.
Thank you.
And to Dame Shirley Lovford from Swindon 105.5, who's been pushing all the buttons and sliders in the studio. So, from Alicia and myself,
goodbye.